welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
This is Jessica with Syosset Libraries Turn the Page podcast. My librarian co-host is
Evelyn, Reader Services Librarian.
And today's guest is an amazing author. He has so many books that he's written. This particular book, Hell of a Book, I finished in one sitting, which is quite a task because I have six-year-old twins, and being able to do anything with them around takes 10 years. So I literally read this book from page to page within a period of a couple of hours.
That's pretty impressive.
So it took a lot longer than that to write, huh?
Yeah.
A little bit. Sure thing. My name is Jason Mott. I've written four novels so far. My first novel is The Returned, and my latest novel is Hell of a Book. And I'm really excited to be here.
Thank you for coming here. We're excited to have you. I loved The Return. I thought that was just such an absolute fabulous story. And then it became a TV show, which is amazing. That was also wonderful. So that was your debut book?
Yeah, it was a debut novel. And yeah, it just kind of exploded and did a whole lot of awesome things. And it was a very fun kind of ride.
Yeah, absolutely. Fabulous.
So tell us about Hell of a Book, because all I've been telling people is that it's a hell of a book and they need to read it, but it's very difficult to describe. The pacing is so tense and so well done, but it has a pacing that, you know, it keeps the pages turning. You're out of breath, constantly trying to figure out what's going on, but it's got like these breakthrough moments of humor and emotion. And it's just like, it's so difficult to explain. So in your words, please tell us about it.
I'll try to. I actually have trouble explaining it myself, so don't feel bad about that at all. So Hell of a Book is essentially the story of an author on a book tour, and you figure out very quickly this author has a rather loose grip on reality. And as he's touring, he's just written this very big novel, and he's on this book tour, and it's kind of overwhelming and bizarre and strange and funny and wacky. He encounters this 10-year-old kid who keeps reappearing at these strange moments in his life. And he starts to kind of talk to this kid and try to figure out who he is. And so there's that kind of narrative, which goes into a very interesting place about who this kid is and how things work out and, you know, how he kind of relates to the author or doesn't relate to the author. And then there's also a secondary narrative going on about this 10-year-old boy named Soot, who, without giving too much away, just has a very kind of, let's say, difficult life. And it bleeds into a story about America and race and identity and police violence and all those kinds of things that are all balled up into one weird kind of ball of wax.
Yeah. So the author is unnamed in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Was that done purposely, or did he have a name at one point?
No, that was very intentional. Somewhere around the first three or four drafts, so pretty early in the process, I tried giving him a name, just because I knew that people like to have names. I mean, obviously, names exist for a reason. And so I knew that readers would probably want to have a name. So I tried a draft where I actually did give the character a name, and it did not feel correct at all. It just felt really counterintuitive to what the narrative wanted to do. So I immediately got rid of it, and he remained nameless from then on out.
I don't think it would have been the same, honestly, with it. There was, because one of the things that I loved so much about the book was that it was saying a lot with sort of diverting the topic. So, you know, you have this author, and he's a Black author, an African-American author. He's on a book tour for a book that everybody keeps saying is a hell of a book. But it's like, you know, like, there's no clear description about what the book is, but you're taking this journey with him. But in the background, there's Black Lives Matter protests, and there's people asking him if he wants to comment on it as a Black author. And it just so much is said without things being said. How did this whole story just sort of formulate? Is that a word
formulated? Totally a word.
Yes, completely a word. I'm losing my mind. I'm like, wait, is that a word?
So the story is there's a long winding path to how the story kind of developed. It initially began, honestly, after the return happened. Because when the return happened, I went from being a call center representative to a best-selling author on a book tour. And the tour was like 2 months of just weird insanity. And so I wanted to kind of capture that. So, you know, you go back almost a decade and there was this kernel of an idea about an author on book tour. And so at some point in the last decade or so, I kind of wrote a draft of that and it was okay, but it wasn't really amazing. It was something was missing from it. And then you fast forward to Trayvon Martin, Tamir Rice, like just the last 5-6 years, actually more, I mean, obviously it goes farther back than that, but like somewhere within the last 5 to 6 years, it was just kind of overwhelming, just upswell of these events. And I was having a lot of conversations with a friend about them. Like every day we'd go on the phone and talk about some new shooting and try to dissect it and try to understand it, try to figure it out. And so it became so big that I wanted to put it in the writing. I wanted to kind of actually have a discussion about it and also take part of my personal life and put that into the project as well. And that eventually became what Hell of a Book actually is, because I knew I still had the author on book tour and I thought that would be a good framework to work within. So I went back and I just molded these two together and this weird animal called Hell of a Book came out of it.
So would you say some of this is autobiographical?
Yes, there's more autobiography here than I think most readers are actually going to suspect, which is totally fine. Like the book is about, this fear of identity and like hiding from people and hiding from identity and hiding from certain tasks and roles. So it fits very well that like there are a lot of autobiographical components, but they're very muddled with the fiction. So the readers will never quite be able to pick apart like what's actually me and what's the fictional author. There's a lot of that going on for sure.
The story with Soot begins, he's very young. Actually, was he like 5 or 6, I think?
I think he was around 7 or 8, somewhere around there, if I remember.
Somewhere in that neighborhood. Yeah, and he's trying to make himself disappear, like physically
invisible.
His parents have told him that he has to become, what was it, the unseen? And it's like the age that he was at, I guess thinking about my own children, like they're a little bit younger, but it's like just at that cusp where magical thinking and reality sort of collide. And, for him, being the unseen could save his life because everybody keeps talking about how dark he is. Like even like in his own community, the other black kids in his community, which is why they call him Soot, are like, you're so dark, and which means a different, obviously a different conversation with his parents down the line. This is such a wild question. Was he meant to be just like an amalgam of children, or just sort of like one particular case?
No. Soot's story, like if we're talking about like the colorist, the discussion of like colorism that occurs in the novel, and also the larger discussion of like, minorities, particularly black minorities and police and that interaction that occurs, like that's definitely a universal, or let's say a universal within the state of America kind of discussion being had there. The colorism thing is definitely a real thing. Like when you're younger and you're black, like there are all these different shades of black and all these different connotations of what those different shades mean. And it traces all the way back to slavery. And like, there's just so much layering and then an indoctrination that occurs around like what color you are and how your skin reflects that. And then you scale that up to the large scale of like how America treats you when you are a certain color. And that's part of why Soot became this character who I wanted to have this super identifiable black skin and what that meant to that character. Both within his own community and within like the American community as a whole as well, and all that kind of, so it provided just a really good kind of landing pad to kind of start building that discussion on.
And then you have the kid who also has no name.
And seems to have a lot of the same identifiable qualities that Soot has.
Mm-hmm.
Every time you pass by a TV set, there's another shooting. which is, I guess, the way we feel. I mean, every, you know, it's just crazy what's going on in this world, or the United States, I should say. And every time you put on the TV, there's another shooting. So I guess you incorporate that into the book.
Yeah. The goal was to try to capture that. Cause I mean, that was the feeling that I had, you know, when I was in writing it, and still the feeling I have now, where like, it was a very overwhelming kind of ever present thing where like, there was always a tragedy. You turn the news on, and my friend and I, you know, for months we were having these daily conversations about it. And a lot of the conversations would be, hey, did you hear about this one? It's like, what do you mean? Oh yeah, there's another one here that happened. And it's like, oh God, I hadn't even heard about that one yet. And it was just constant. You could not keep up with all the things that were happening. So I wanted the readers to feel that same kind of pressure, that same kind of sense of powerlessness and panic almost, and have that be a part of their reading experience as well.
Yeah, the way that just, I think I mentioned before, the way that everything progresses, because it begins with the author and he's just sort of this carefree guy he's on book tour. He's excited about like the fact that he's staying in this hotel that's nicer than other hotels, and he's fooling around with whomever comes his way. But it's just like, it's broken by like that first, oh, that's, did you hear about what happened? It's so horrible, which I think is a conversation that, like Evelyn was saying, it's reoccurring. And it's certainly, I think, it's certainly not new, although I think within the last, man, Trayvon Martin, was that 2012? It's been a while.
Yeah, it's definitely been a while.
It's a conversation that I think, you know, the media, it's more in the media's eye, but it didn't start with Trayvon Martin, which is what you were saying. But it's like, so you have like these, it's almost like the author is, you know, he's trying to sell his book. He has his relationship with his publicist and editor, which if you want to talk about that a little bit, that was interesting. But it's, you know, the kid is sort of like ever present, always there, sort of like reminding him of something like he doesn't want to think about.
Yeah, for certain. Like that's a lot of the character's challenge is he wants to just put his head down and live his life, which I think reflects a lot of what Americans want to do when they turn the news on and there are these kind of events that occur and these tragedies that just stack one atop the other. There reaches a point where you just feel so powerless that you just want to put your head down and just live your life and hope that someone works it all out and it gets sorted out by someone else. And so that's what the main character is trying to do. It takes him a while for the noise, for the events to break through the noise that he's built in his life. Like he's constructed a life of chaos and insanity and fun and zaniness and all these kinds of things very meticulously to purposefully avoid the idea of like actually hearing about these reports and doing something about it and being a part of that conversation. So I think that, again, to me, that speaks to a lot of what Americans try to do on a daily basis with things that become too big almost. And like, we have to, you know, not do that, but it's difficult. So the character is struggling with that.
Did you have the whole book planned out? Do you outline or do you just fly by the seat of your pants?
No, it's a mixture of the two. Like typically I'm a big outliner. Things always begin with an outline. I'll say that. But after the first draft is written, because the first draft is I just follow the outline just to kind of get things down. After that, the outline kind of goes out the window and I let the story start to build itself. Because for me, the outline just becomes a framework. It's like I'm gonna have a house about this big, this tall, this many floors, and I can kind of build from there. So once the outline is done, I'll let things kind of develop on their own. This particular story mutated in ways that I just never expected, more than any other project I've ever had. Like people oftentimes ask, you know, when did the kid appear in the writing? Like at what stage did the character of the kid kind of appear? And it's very strange. Like I can't remember exactly when that character, like why I thought that character up and when that character kind of appeared. He just, almost like he does in the novel, the character was just there in one of the drafts one day and fit very well with the narrative. And so things started following that thread.
I was going to say that's very organic to what actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, like this author is having his breakfast and bam, there's this kid. I know I mentioned there's some humor in the story. There's some interesting cameos by certain Hollywood celebrities.
We can give it away. I don't think it's a spoiler. I think it's okay to talk about it.
It was good because it was one of those things that really broke up the tension in a good way. Nicolas Cage just sort of shows up.
Yeah, I think Nick Cage is bound to show up anywhere in life. Like, I expect him to appear on the most random places. It's never happened yet, but I expect it. So the backstory there is I'm a huge Nick Cage fan. I have been for just decades. At some point in the revisions, we were editing some stuff, and there was some stuff that my agent wanted taken out. She's like, oh, this stuff here is kind of redundant. It's not really working. And at this point, I was very much like, I'm just making this novel as much of my weird project as I wanted to be. And so I said, okay, cool. I'll take this out, but I'm putting Nick Cage in. And my agent started laughing. She goes, what are we talking about? I said, yeah, don't worry about it. You'll like it. And I wrote this scene, and it wound up fitting very well thematically, because part of why I like Nick Cage is because he's someone who I feel understands how other people see him, and he controls and guides that narrative very deftly. And in a story about identity and about how others see you and how you respond to that, I thought that made a very fitting kind of character, kind of cameo to put into the story.
It was great. And I have a friend who is like a huge Nicolas Cage fan, and she's always trying to sort of like put into words exactly why she's like, I don't care if people tell me it's bad. I don't care what the critics say. I am going to watch that Nick Cage movie. And mm-hmm. I was impressed by how many nicknames the author had for him without actually calling him Nick Cage. To be like, oh yeah, this is Nick Cage. It was great.
Thank you. Yeah, that was me having a lot of fun on the page. Because this novel obviously has a lot of heavy moments and a lot of hard to read, and they were hard to write moments as well. And so the comedy and like those moments like that were just gifts for me also as a writer, because I got to play around and like, you know, have Nick Cage put into it. And it's funny because when I wrote the scene, I texted a few of my friends and I said, I just wrote Nick Cage into my novel, and they all replied like, of course you did. Like, yeah, that's of course you did. So it was a lot of fun for me.
Yeah, you got a copy of the book.
I gotta find a way to get him a copy of the book. Yes.
You totally do. And like, I just like, it was like, he's so intense. I just pictured him sitting down on the plane next to the author with his typical Nick Cage gaze. So yeah, and you also had some humorous parts of it with the author and his love story.
Yeah, there's some wacky dating kind of scenes in there, because again, like, it was a mixture. There's a lot going on in the novel. That even the dating stuff is there for partly for comedy and partly to kind of spoof, or not spoof, but like just have a lighter moment. But it also does kind of build this discussion about the author's attempts to hide from himself in relationships and use dating as a means to further avoid facing these certain things in his life. And yeah, and it also just made for some good laughs at times and some good kind of heartfelt moments. And again, like, there are parts of those that are pulled from my own dating experience, and like, there's all kind of wacky Easter eggs thrown in there from my own personal life. So it was, again, one of those things that's fun to write, but also functional for the narrative.
So the three Kellys, the first two Kellys were a little bit more comical. The third Kelly really just sort of, the whole story just sort of like just rips my heart out towards the end, much like the book in general.
One thing that we didn't mention, that the book, hell of a book. First of all, it comes out on June 29th.
Yep, just on
and
the TV.
It was one of Entertainment Weekly's 15 books you need to read this June, one of the New York Post's best summer reading books, one of GMA's 27 books for June, and it got a starred review in Book Page. So I think everybody should know all those wonderful, wonderful things that have been said about the book. So,
and I think I've been telling all of my friends that I give the book 5 million stars.
thank you.
Well, it's it's one of those books, you know, because there are a lot of books that have been coming out recently, you know, that try to address this very difficult topic.
Yeah.
Right. And they've all got their own approach to it, and you know, they're all speaking the truth from the author's experiences. And I guess, like, for myself, you know, I'm a white suburban woman. It's, you know, trying to trying to figure out, like, I guess, because Evelyn, I know, like, we've talked about it a little bit when we were talking about The Hate U Give, you know, just sort of like how to process it and what, like, from our stance, like, what can we do when this is like an experience that we can't even fathom? And I think, like, one of the things I loved about this book in particular was that it addressed that it's unfathomable for the people that it's happening to on a completely different level. So it was, you know, I read a lot of horror and suspense. For some reason, during the pandemic, it was what made me feel better. But because that was like almost like escapism, because the situations in that are so wild, you know, it's like it was harder to read about the things that were happening right in front of me. But with this book, it mixed a lot of the pacing that worked as that, like, you know, like comfort with addressing something by also being like, I'm like, we're avoiding this topic, but we're really not.
Right. Right. Yeah. And that was very intentional. Like, I wanted to have, you know, part of this project and part of this story that I was telling was me kind of as a writer, really understanding a lot of my writing philosophy and like bringing that to the page. So personally, Jason Mott, personally, I don't take myself very seriously when I, you know, if I don't have to. I mean, obviously I have a lot of serious thoughts about a lot of serious topics, but on any given day, I try to, you know, just watch a Nick Cage movie and have a good day and like laugh at myself when mistakes are made and just make that part of who I am. And so I wanted to build this place where you could have this very serious, important, heavy discussion, and yet at the same time, do it with a bit of an absurdist kind of lens. Because I think also there aren't a lot of voices in like there aren't a lot of minority voices in the genres of absurdism and those kinds of like wacky comedies. There are some, but it's not nearly as populated as a lot of other places. So I wanted this to be part of that kind of that section of the bookstore of absurdity and humor, but also social commentary and politics and all those very heavy, important things. So the combining those two together was also a way of like bringing readers, helping people who are maybe outside the conversation find their way into the conversation as best they could.
I think you did it. Well, you know what? The fact that this book is about a book tour, have you missed going out on book tour, or now opening up, are you going to be able to do a book tour with this book? Hopefully, yes, with everything opening up, especially here in New York right now.
Yeah, the irony is, you know, so much of this book was me poking fun at book tours because I had a really challenging first book tour. But after a year in quarantine, I want to go anywhere at this point. So I would kind of love a book tour right now. But right now, I think when this book comes out, the first part of the book tour would be all virtual because publishers are still a little bit hesitant to send people out on the road. But I do think in the fall, they're starting to book me for like in-person events and things like that. So I'm hoping to get maybe in the fall, start doing some more traveling and actually get out and see people again, which would be really good.
That'll be great. It deserves a book tour. It definitely does. It's a hell of a book.
It really is. And a hell of a read. So before we close out, because he came up so much, so what is your favorite, like, what's your comfort Nick Cage movie to watch?
That's such a difficult question. I would probably say if I had to pick one kind of comfort food from the Nick Cage lexicon body of work there, I would say probably Raising Arizona.
Good.
I'm a big Coen Brothers fan. So it's a mixture of the Coen Brothers and Nick Cage and one ball of wax. Like that's just perfect for me.
Awesome. Are you working on another book?
Yes, I'm always working on another book. I'll just say that. I try to talk too much about projects that are in construction, but yes, I'm definitely working on another book.
And you write in such different genres, so we never know what to expect, right?
Yeah, and that's what I love about it. Yes, I think that what's fun about this book is surprising people with something very unexpected, and I hope to maybe do that again, or we'll see.
Okay, well,
wanted to mention really quickly, you also, another person who, like, was it James Hong? Who was the, I'm trying to remember, who was the actor that the limousine driver?
Oh, yes. James Hong, yes.
I'm a big fan of his as well. So that was kind of a fun,
I've been a fan of his. Like, I feel like a lot of my childhood was watching him in the movies. So I wanted to do a little bit of an homage to him as an actor and as a person. So yeah, thank you. That was great.
Yeah, that was a fun little Easter egg as well, especially since it wasn't technically him, but
right.
sort of having him as like a guide for the author,
mm-hmm.
you know, and having his picture in my mind when all of those scenes were happening was, you know, again, it added to the absurdism and sort of just guided me through reading this book, which
perfect.
Was just
perfect.
So good.
Excellent. Awesome. That's exactly what he was there for. It's kind of be like Virgil a little bit. That was exactly what he was there for.
Ooh, nice. I like that.
Thank you so much, Jason. We really
thank you all for having me. This is terrific.
Nice talking to you.
Yes.
Nice talking to you all.
Please come back and talk to us about whatever you write.
I will do. Thank you.
All right. So once again, this was Jessica. My librarian co-host was
Evelyn.
And our guest today was
Jason Mott.
And we are going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
Time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.